Hey, folks, hope you're having a good day. I'm having a great day. One of the best days I've had in a long, long time because tickets for my Broadway show are now on sale at Ticketmaster.com. My show is Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio. It is a completely improvised show involving the audience. It's not a crowd work show. It's something very different. And there's really not anything like it out there. It starts July 15th and it runs to August 16th. It's a limited run. I hope you can make it. Just go to Ticketmaster.com and use the code TLS and you get 40% off the ticket. 40% off with the code TLS, Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio. It's a big, big moment for me. Hope you can come out and support me. Hope you all had a great Father's Day out there. I did, and mainly because of the man Great Grill. Yes, this is a sponsor thing, but please, I need you to hear this. They helped me bring this podcast, so I need you to just hear it out and support them. Listen, my whole life, the only way to get a good steak is at a high-end steakhouse, but I can't afford to go there anymore because I can't get an equity line of credit on my house to get an order of cream spinach. But with the cast iron Man Great Grill, I had steakhouse quality steaks for Father's Day. Unbelievable. There's no finer gift than this grill. I'm telling you, that's mangrate.com, M-A-N-G-R-A-T-E.com. You get juicy, tender meat, no flare-ups. Let me tell you how good it is, okay? A cow could walk up to a grill using the Man Great Grill and say, I'll take my medium rare. Listen, order now. You can still get 40% off all grates and premium brushes at mangrate.com. Just enter the coupon code DAD18. That's DAD18. It's 100% American made, designed to fit virtually any grilling surface. Get something that won't disappoint. You don't want to be disappointed. No, Man Great doesn't disappoint. Get 40% off grates and their custom heavy duty grill brushes by using the code DAD18 at checkout. That's mangrate.com. Enter DAD18. Get 40% off. And it's an amazing item. So after I had my delicious steak, sat down to a really cool movie, something I hadn't seen before, a cult classic, Sybil. Yeah, it's about a woman with multiple personalities and a lot of issues. It was good. Reminded me of my mother. But that's neither here nor there. I got it at deepdiscount.com. They're a loyal sponsor of my show. I paid a little over $5 for it. That's right. Because right now, the savings are insane on the site. It's a wide summer sale, tens of thousands of items at even lower prices. Click their logo on my homepage. You'll see what I mean. It's right there. You can't miss it. Click deepdiscount.com logo. It'll take you right to it. And not only are you going to find classics from back in the day, you're going to find hard-to-find titles, new releases out this week. Pacific Rim Uprising, the Monsters vs. Robots sequel, is now available on DVD and Blu-ray. Get your copy now for a great price at deepdiscount.com. Maybe Sybil joins the monsters and together they beat the robots. I'm just saying. So listen, click the logo on my homepage. Be good to yourself. Buy your favorites and support my sponsor because they support me. Check it out now. Thank you, deepdiscount.com. Really, really excited about my guest. Just a great artist and someone with an incredible story who has a really cool musical that is coming out. It's a six-time Grammy Award-winning B.B. Winans, who has a really great musical called Born for This, a new musical at the Cutler Majestic Theater in Boston. It's opening June 22nd. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. This is a really cool story, and you have this incredible backstory. And the reason this musical came about from what I read was that Roberta Flack had been sort of pushing you to write your life story. Is that right?
Well, not so much pushing me as it was a little bit more scarier, if I can say that word. We were just on the phone having a conversation about something totally different. And then all of a sudden she detours and says, BB, you got to write that musical, baby, about you and your sister, your family. It's a new musical. Get to it. And then it's a movie and this and that. And then she goes right back into our conversation. I mean, I seriously looked at the phone and said, did Roberta take a medication? Because I don't know where that came from.
And was that the first time she had brought that up with you?
Ever.
Wow.
Ever. We have never talked about me writing a musical. I had never dreamed of writing a musical.
But then four days later in Montreal, weird, in a hotel room, you wrote the first draft of it, right?
And 4 days later, I walk into a hotel in Montreal, and like a faucet came on, and I went to my laptop and wrote the first draft of which now 10 years down the road is called Born for This.
Wow. And what do you think sort of subconsciously it was in the, I mean, that's incredible writing that and getting a first draft out that quickly. Do you think that means that subconsciously kind of this thing was ready to come out and you didn't know it until Roberta?
I believe that God really does work in mysterious ways. And it was just a seed planted inside of me through Roberta Flack, you know, and I've learned to not fight things like that, but go with it, you know. And it is still something that I see and look on stage. This is our fourth city. I'm sorry. And I'm still amazed because this was nowhere on my bucket list, Paul.
Yeah. When you go from city to city, and I think eventually it's going to come to Broadway, are you tweaking the musical as you go along and you know, kind of testing what worked? Yeah.
What they saw in Atlanta is not what you'll see in Boston. And that's the thing I think I've enjoyed the most. You know, when you do a recording and you put it out, there's really nothing else you can do to that particular recording. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to live just the way it is. But theater, live theater, you can evolve. So every city, there's been another song written inspired by what we see and how to tell the story a little bit better.
Right.
You know, so it's really have been an enjoyable journey and learning experience.
Yeah. Well, you come from an incredible family of gospel singers and your parents, siblings. And was it just a foregone conclusion that you were going to be a gospel R&B singer? Is that just sort of understood in the family?
It was understood only that we had a passion for music. We had no idea our lives would turn out the way it turned out.
Yeah.
You know, just like anybody else, you know, especially from a large family, you went to school and you got a job.
Right.
And you did your job to the best of your ability, right? Mm. And so, but we always had a passion for singing and for playing and for writing songs. And so that passion led to this introduction, and that introduction led to that. But one thing my father always taught us, whatever we're doing, whether it's a crowd of five or a crowd of 5,000, give 100%.
Yeah.
And so I think that itself prepares you to where me and my family arrived.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's talk about the backstory a little bit. I mean, you were 17 and your sister was 15, I believe. And you guys left Detroit and went south.
Yeah.
Why did you leave? And how do you do that at 17? I could barely tie my shoes at 17. Like, how do you, and you call it a culture shock. You call it leaving, but why Pineville, North Carolina, and why leave at that age?
Well, let's say it was a miracle for fact. Because my father didn't allow us to go and spend the night across the street. He was really strict about all his children being in his house, you know, to make sure we were safe. And so, especially for my sister Cece at 15. So my brothers were angry at my father for allowing us to go. But long story short, a gentleman named Howard McQuarrie became the musical director of the PTL Club, which was Jim and Tammy Faye Baker.
Yeah.
PTL. And called and asked if we could come down and audition for the PTL singers. And long story short, we went down and my mother took us down on a Greyhound bus. It took like 40 days to get down there on a Greyhound. I mean,
a lot of stops, huh?
At everybody. So we went and we auditioned, came back, and they accepted Cece. They said, "The girl, we'll take the girl, but we don't want the boy." And that broke my heart at 17. But in order for her to go, my father said, I simply said, "I'll go with her, you know, so she can have the opportunity." And I went down and got a job at the grocery store.
Ah.
So, yeah. So
you're bagging groceries, and your sister's in the, is a part of the backup singers.
On TV.
Jesus, this already is a great story. And how did this scout? Why did they pick the two of you out of anybody that they could pick, especially in your family? Did he see you and your sister specifically somewhere?
No. He just asked if we. Now, Howard McQuarrie knew my brothers, and he knew, you know, mostly my older brothers, because they were a group already and recording. And so they had a friendship, and he knew us, and he knew we sang, you know, at home, and just asked if me and Cece would come audition. And so we did. So, you look back and say, wow, this was meant to be. I mean, even our nicknames, Paul.
Yeah.
My given name is Benjamin. Hers is Priscilla. And so my family and people at the church we went to called us BB and CC, our nickname. It was our nicknames all our lives.
Right.
You know? And so we go down to PTL, and then one day, Howard, the same guy, asked me, he had planned this, he really did, to sing in the choir. And he said, Cece's going to lead this song. And when she leads her part, I want you to ad lib. I just want you to, there was a lyric that had the word whisper. He said, when we get there, you just give it all you got. And I did. I said, a whisper. And Jim came over and said, who did that whispers? And I lifted my hands. He said, hey, I want you in the singers. So it was the whispers that got me my job.
Which is ironic, because you're singing. You're singing. That's great. Well, you come from a gospel family. I go to Jazz Fest a lot, and my favorite stage is the gospel tent. And, you know, I live in the Northeast. Yeah. There's not a lot of gospel music up here. And it's incredible, and it's soothing. And, so now you're 17 and 15, and you're working in the empire of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. What was that like? And do they start to try to indoctrinate the people that work for them into their sort of views of the world and that kind of thing?
No.
Or was it just a straight job?
No, not at all. But what was interesting more than anything was the transition of an all dominantly black experience, school and church and, you know, home and friends, to now Pineville, North Carolina, where there was 4,000 employees and about three were black, and that's including me and Cece. So my world changed.
Yeah.
The world changed in so many wonderful and funny ways, such as food. I mean, where I came from, we had for dessert, sweet potato pie.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I was being offered pumpkin pie. And I was like, what's that?
You white people are crazy. Pumpkins, what are you doing eating pumpkins,
like,
right?
Halloween.
Just, and was in terms of, you know, beyond the food and things like that, in terms of the way they behaved or the way they treated you, was there a little bit of a race issue, or was it awkward for them to accept you initially?
Oh, man, it was an experience that prepared me and my sister for the world we live in. And so, but there was love there. And so, for instance, you know, and it's in the musical, one particular guy, he was a cameraman, you know, he was, his wife had a history of miscarriages and she was pregnant again. And we just, you know, would just encourage him and say, man, we're praying your wife have this baby. She had the baby about 2 years later. He's moving because he has another job, and he comes up to me crying. He was 30 years older than me, crying and saying, you know, thank you. And I'm trying to figure out, what did I do that you're crying so hard?
Mm-hmm.
And then these words proceed out of his mouth. He said, I hated you. Every time you would speak to me or shake my hand, I would cringe.
Wow.
Then he said, I was raised in a Christian home, where his parents taught them to hate black people.
Wow.
And that black people were evil.
Mm.
And I'm at that point, I'm like, nah, I don't know what to do right here. And then he says, you know, because I was raised in a Christian home. My parents didn't teach us that. And so I'm confused.
Yeah.
But then he says this, and these words have followed me ever since I was 21. He said, but because of the love that you have shown me and your consistent love, you broke the chains of hatred inside of me.
Wow.
And I want to say thank you.
Wow. That's incredible. Because that was where my next question was, as you're saying this, like, how did you react when you were treated poorly because of your color? Would you lash out, or would you just like smile and take it and move on? Or how did
No. So at that moment, I hugged the guy and I realized that love is more powerful than hatred. And so with life, anything else I ran into, I chose laughter. To know me, to know my family, we laugh.
Yeah.
And so I actually wrote a song about it as well. So instead of choosing anger when I met up with racism or various other things that were hard to deal with or to accept, I chose laughter. And laughter is like a medicine.
Yeah.
It really is.
And obviously it had a powerful effect on that gentleman. And then over time, others started to accept you, right? I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was people, a lot of people don't understand about Jim and Tammy. They weren't from the South. Jim and Tammy were from Minnesota.
Oh.
So they didn't have that kind of teaching, you know, from where they came from. You know, they became, you know, and to this day, Jim Baker is like a father to me. They became our Caucasian parents.
Mm-hmm.
And they loved us. They protected us. They had the biggest hearts that you could ever imagine. I know people only saw what the news showed and their failures and mistakes, but you're talking about two people, and we kind of allow people to see that in the musical.
Mm-hmm.
The most sweetest and biggest hearted people you would ever meet.
Really? Because I always felt like the perception of them was that they were sort of in that category of less than legitimate televangelists that were just sort of using the gospel and the Bible to make a lot of money.
No. And being there and being in it and being a part of it, I speak from experience. I speak from understanding. And even to this day, as I said, when we opened 2016 in Atlanta, Jim Baker was on my right side and my mother was on my left side the opening of the show. So, very much portrayed as something else. We all have our mistakes that we make. And a lot of times it's not just that person, it's the people that you surround yourself. So a lot of lessons I learned from there. It's not just you, but the people you surround yourself with. It's important that you know their character.
Mm.
Because with, you know, you ask any entertainer, trouble comes from the inside.
Oh, yeah.
From the outside.
Yeah. Yeah. You said something in an article I read about sort of the doubts and insecurities and rejection, and something that you talk about in the musical and is covered, and I related to it. Like, am I good enough? Why do they keep saying no? And I was really I was really struck by that because I know that feeling.
Oh man, oh yeah. I have two children who I love, and I've tried to teach them. There's a line that says you have to be comfortable with rejection. You have to be comfortable and allow the no's to fuel your yes.
Mm.
And so
does it fuel it? Is it like an I'll show them kind of with a tinge of anger or like how do you use it?
And that, you know, if you pull up to the gas station, you have premium and you have another unleaded. No, you can fill yourself with that, but I go for the good stuff.
Yeah.
And the no, I'm taught all my life, there will be no's. Now, my father said this, before you leave this house, you're going to know who you are. So when you get out there, the world starts to tell you in their understanding who you are. You won't go down that road because you already know who you are. So when I met up with the nose, I don't get angry because I know who I am.
And so
I
you know just you just let it roll off your back and go, well, they don't really know me, and that's their opinion, and you move on.
It's just like you all to catch up.
What's that?
I say all the time when they say no, I say, okay, follow me. You'll catch up because I'm going to keep going.
That's great. That's great. You know, you talk about, too, the conflict of faith and fame, and you have this quote, because you cover this in the musical. You say, artists want to display their talent like anyone else, but it's the trap of fame that you have to navigate through that makes it challenging. Elaborate on that a little bit for me.
Well, there's a song, there's a couple of songs, but one of my favorite songs in the musical is a song that the character Whitney sings, and it says, don't live for the applause. Mm. It's so easy. I've seen with dear friends who have allowed the applause of people to trap them. You know, when you're on stage and there's 20,000 people adoring you and clap, and then you leave there and you go home and you're by yourself, you kind of get lost because you start to live for the adulations and the love that comes from other people, or the so-called love that comes from other people.
Right.
And so it's so easy to get lost, especially when you're sad or, you know, you're going through hard times and that double-edged sword where you don't want people to know that you're not feeling well. You don't want people to know you have challenges, health challenges or mental health challenges or whatever the challenge is. Artists sometimes, because of the applause, start to put up walls. And, you know, I went through a divorce, and when I went through the divorce, you know, people said, you don't want, are you kidding? I didn't allow anyone to cause me to live for the applause or to live life in a fantasy world, you know. So I went through divorce. Yeah, it hurt. It's hard. Mm-hmm. At the same time, everybody else, not everybody else, but a whole lot of people have gone through, you know.
It's life, so, you know, you live a full life and life's ups and downs, and, you know, it's how you react and deal with those downs, like you said, you know.
One of the things that I'm very privileged to is the love of people. I love people. Because of that, I've had wonderful relationships, right? Mm-hmm. And so one person that comes to mind as we're speaking is Maya Angelou, the poet Maya Angelou. She said something to me that I will never forget, and that was, Bibi, enjoy the struggle. Mm-hmm. What did she say? Enjoy the struggle, because it's in the struggle. She said, everybody's trying to get to the top. Everybody's trying to be number one. Everyone is trying to get to the blue sky. Mm-hmm. She said, but it's in the struggle you really find out who you are. It's in the struggle you really find out who people are. And most important, it's in the struggle you find out who God is. So enjoy those moments, because those moments are the most teachable moments you're ever going to have.
Right. But we live in a society where that's easier said than done. And this is what I mean by this. And we're both performers. And so we have the exact same experiences. We're just in different parts of the arts. I'll have people literally, I had a guy say to me recently, so I heard you're like sort of big time comedian. What have you been on? What have you been on? And he started to list shows to ask me if I've been on them. I've had other people say to me, like, what's going on? When are you going to have your own show? What's the problem? And so I find personally, it's hard to keep, to wall that out and not have that start to seep in and start to make me feel, you know, Or you know, insecure or bad about myself. Or the case of, like, you've been to a lot of, like, industry parties, and, like, you know, there's the people that are looking over your shoulder for someone more important to talk to. You get treated based on your credits on your resume. I manage it, but I find it difficult to manage, and I'm not sure that I enjoy the struggle sometimes maybe the way I should.
But Paul, you just said the key word, the way it makes you feel. Feel. What I've learned is, feelings are fleeting emotions. And so I don't base anything on how I feel at the moment, you know, because people, as you just said, people make you feel bad that you don't have a show. okay, I know people who have a show who feel bad. So having the show is not going to make me feel anything that is reality. So I don't base my life on feelings. You know, we work hard, and sometimes we work hard, and sometimes we achieve those things that we work hard to achieve. Sometimes it don't happen, and that's okay.
So then are you basing your approach not on feelings, then just on logical thinking, and just sort of you're more in your head than you are anywhere else on this? Or?
Well, beyond the thinking, I am, as you stated earlier, the musical is based on faith and fame. Mm. Now, what's important is faith. I'm a man of faith. What is faith? Faith is things you really want and hope for, but you don't see them.
Mm.
You know, faith turned reality is, oh, I can see it now. Mm. I'm there. You know, so I live on faith. So understand, my faith plays such a very critical role in my life. What are you saying? I'm simply saying, I believe everything that God has for me is not going to be anyone else's.
Mm.
It's mine. It's mine. It's not my brother's. It's not my sister's. It's not my mom. It's mine. So therefore, all I have to do is work hard and do what I do. And some things I'm not supposed to do. Some things that I want, I'm not supposed
to
do.
So it's a higher power that you're putting your faith in.
Yes. Oh, gosh, because if I placed in on feelings like we just said, I'll be up and down, up and down.
So replace feelings with belief then. Instead of it's not how you feel,
yes,
you do things
sir.
Based on what you believe. And if you continue to believe in yourself, mm-hmm. all of that outside noise of negativity won't affect you.
Yeah. So you see, my father and your foundation is so important. Mm. You know, my father used to tell us all the time, y'all not going to be the greatest singers in the world. Don't you walk around here like you're the greatest thing in the world. But what you're going to be is confident.
Yeah.
That whenever you stand up, no matter who you come after or who you come before, you are confident. And that will show.
Interesting. How much of an adjustment was it, or technically, what did you have to change in writing a musical versus writing, you know, an album? And
I had to go to school. And so what I did, I had an apartment and I sat in New York for 10 years, went to every musical I could think of, every play I could think of, connected with the Broadway world. And it just went, and I learned, because writing for a record is different from writing for a storyline, right? Even though I wrote about my life, I had 5 minutes or 10 minutes or however long I wanted the song to be, you know, especially album cuts. Now, radio cuts is a little bit different than an album cut. A radio cut should be no more than 3 minutes. You learn those things.
Right.
You know, when I was coming up, they had at the music company's A&R division, artists and repertoire, they taught you, you know, these things. These days that don't exist much. So I had to learn how to write a full song in a minute, in 60 seconds,
and
you know, what to say and what not to say. So it was just a learning experience that I enjoyed. I really enjoyed and still learning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's life. I think you learn until you're 6 feet under, and that's the great thing about life and the challenging thing about life. It sounds terrific. I can't wait to see it. You're going to be running in Boston for a while, correct? And then you're moving on from
July 15th, open, as you said, June 22nd through July 15th. And hey, you know, I put it out there. I just told you I was a man of faith. But right now, it's looking like we're going to come to Broadway in the fall.
That's great. Congratulations, man. I actually am doing a one-man show on Broadway myself starting in the middle of July. So I'm going through the preparation for that. And it's a lot of work, but it's very surreal.
So enjoy the struggle.
Yeah, man. That's exactly right. I mean, I've been not getting a lot of sleep, but this is only once in a lifetime where you end up on Broadway. Well, you sound like a great guy, man. And I love your humor and your And you actually helped me personally in this conversation, kind of look at things a little differently. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Enjoyed speaking to you. Looking forward to coming to your show. And then I'm going to drag you to mine.
Oh, so I'll come. I got your cell. I'm going to send you my cell. And just don't call me in the middle of the night or send me any, dirty pictures.
I won't call you after you. You don't have to worry. I go to bed. They laugh at me, especially my children. I go to bed at 6:30 p.m.
Whoa.
And I wake up at 3:45. By 4:30, I'm in the streets running my 7 miles. Mm. It's the most therapeutic thing I've done for the last 10 years of my life. I get up and I get it done early.
Yeah,
that's
so
my time. And then
that's great.
And then I shut it down, Paul.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to bed when you're getting up, so, because I'm a comedian and I work nights. So we'll figure it out. I'll come on a run with you. June 22nd, Born for This is the musical. It's opening at the Cutler Majestic Theater in Boston. And this is Grammy-winning, the great B.B. Winans. Really great to have you on, man.
Thank you, sir. My pleasure.